session number 906.
Mr. Finlayson, Reel 1. When did you join the army, Mr. Finlayson?
June 1925.
Why did you decide to join?
Well, times were hard, no work about, so that would be the best bet.
What had you been before you joined the army?
Well, I left school at 12 and went into the print fields. Worked in there for, a year or two.
What was the print fields?
Dyeing and bleaching works. Made textile, I suppose, cloth, you know. They bleached it and dyed it.
And how old were you when you applied to join the army?
18.
What did your parents think of it?
Well, they were a bit upset at me going away from home, but Dad had been in the army and knew what it was all about. And I went away with the intention of making an allotment from my pay to my parents to help out, which I did. Went to Stirling Castle. Didn't want to join the Argyles because I knew too many people in the Argyles. I wanted to sort of get away from people I knew, really. I waited there 4 days and the Seaforce opened. I joined the Seaforce. Went to Fort George, the Seaforce depot. Did my 6 months recruits training.
Your father had been in the Argyll and Sutherland Valleys.
Yes, Dad was in the Argyles, yeah.
And when did you get to know that you were going to India?
As I say, I joined the 1st Battalion in November in Belfast. And the battalion moved from Belfast to Aldershot in January 1926, and I carried out different. I went to D Company actually, first of all, and then I went to HQ, took up signalling, and I was there until I went to India in 1927 or 28. But you had plenty of warning that you were going on draft. You were told months ahead the draft was published and you had embarkation leave before you went.
How did you use your embarkation leave?
No, I went home. Spent it at home. Back to Aldershot from embarkation leave. There was still some time to go before your draft was due to leave. Off to Southampton and boarded the troop ship. Said au revoir, everybody.
Had you heard anything about India or soldiering in India before you went?
Yes, we had reports from people who were time expired, came home for discharge. They used to tell us about the life in India, but these were the only people that we got any information from. We didn't know really what we were going to, you know.
What type of stories did the old soldiers tell you?
Well, they told us how hard the life was and how snake infested, scorpion infested India was. You had to watch for this, watch for that. But I never had any trouble with snakes or scorpions. They said that the primitive life, and it was primitive where the local populations were concerned, was pretty horrible. Sanitation was bad and very little hygiene. But in the army, that was all taken care of. We had no problems there at all.
So they didn't paint a very good picture of soldiering in India?
Oh, no, they didn't. They said they'd only been out there and lived in the hope of getting home soon, you know. But mind you, when I went out there, they had been out there for the previous 10 or 12 years, I suppose, some of them did out there. They went out after World War One. I didn't go out until a few years afterwards. And things had bettered by then. They were well, the life didn't compare to what they'd said it would be, you know. It was much better, much better. I thoroughly enjoyed my stay in India. I made friends. I met friends. Spent my leaves up in the hills, which was just like being at home as far as climate was concerned, you know, ideal.
So when you heard that you were going to India and you'd heard all these stories from the old soldiers, were you looking forward to going or not?
Oh, I was looking forward to going. I wanted to travel. Actually, I volunteered for the draft that I was on. They had a practice in those days of asking for volunteers, and then they didn't get enough. They filled the draft up. It was compulsory sort of thing, you know.
Did the army itself give you any information about India before you went? Did it give you any lectures or anything of that kind?
Not that I can remember, no. When you were drafted, it came suddenly, sort of thing, you know. You see, drafts didn't go every year. I was in the 1st Battalion, and the 2nd Battalion was in India. Well, if the 2nd Battalion was up to strength, there was no need to send any more out. But if a draft came home, then they had to be replaced. And that was the system they worked on. When the 2nd Battalion needed to be brought up to strength, a draft was sent out from the 1st Battalion. It was sort of feeder for the battalion abroad, you know.
Were you issued with any special kit before you went to India?
Oh, yes, you had your... Well, they gave you what they called sea kit. Shorts, shirts, khaki drill, which was light clothing, tunics, trousers. They issued you was what they called tropical kit. And you used that on the troop ship because it... the further away you went from this country, the hotter it got, sort of thing. And you did use your KD on the voyage.
What was life like on the troop ship?
Well, very lazy. You had plenty of time to yourself. After you'd carried out your boat drills and... of course, we did have lectures aboard ship on weapon training and what have you. But most of the time was your own. And you spent that in listening to the band, playing cards, playing housey-housey. A pleasant voyage out, 3 weeks of, you know, relaxation near enough.
Didn't you say that you did some dancing on the ship?
Oh, yes, there were dances. They were all male efforts.
So the soldiers had to dance with each other, did they?
Yes, yeah, they danced with each other. Actually, in India, they had company dances where there were no women available. Except maybe when you went to the local dances out there, you had the married quarters wives. They came, but they came with their husbands, and you were lucky if you got a dance with them. Women were very scarce, actually.
Didn't you feel foolish dancing with each other?
Not really. It was more of a giggle than anything else, you know. And in addition to the dance, you got a good supper for nothing out of PRI funds.
Were conditions on the troop ship very crowded?
Yes, there were, because there were other drafts from other regiments going out as well, and it took a bit of getting used to sleeping in a hammock for 3 weeks. First couple of nights were a wee bit uncomfortable, but after that you got adjusted to it, you know, and you just slung your hammock and got in and off you went to sleep. But it was, the mess decks were crowded. You got up in the morning and you rolled up your hammock out of the way and went to breakfast, which was on the same deck. But conditions were all right. It was air conditioned. I went out on the Neuralia to India, and it was quite a good troop ship. And as I say, it was air conditioned, food was good and plentiful. There were no problems, really.
What was the name of the troop ship you came back from India on?
The one I came back on was the Somersetshire, which was a very good troop ship.
How long did the trip take?
Going out 3 weeks, coming back. I think it took exactly 21 days coming back, because we stopped at Haifa to disembark. The battalion was coming back, but they were going to Palestine. So that coming back time expired, due for discharge, you stayed aboard, you know, whilst the battalion disembarked. And then you came on to Southampton, up to Fort George, and discharged from there onto the Army Reserve.
Were you seasick on the troop ships?
I was never seasick on the troop ships. The only time I was ever seasick was coming home and leave from Belfast. The trip was Belfast to Glasgow, and the Irish Sea was really rough. And I was seasick once. I've never been seasick since. That was before I went to India.
Were the other troops seasick on the way to India?
Quite a lot of seasickness, yes, which meant extra rations for those that weren't. Couldn't face the food.
Did you get bored on the ship? Was it boring?
No. I wouldn't say it was boring. You had good company. You had boxing matches that you went to. There was a lot of... we had the Lincolns, Lincolnshire Regiment, who had an army champion. And they were always there was always a wee bit of needle between the Lincolns and the Seaforce, and we seemed to follow each other. I mean, we went to Belfast, the Lincolns were in Belfast. We come to Aldershot, the Lincolns came to Aldershot, you know, and there was always a wee bit of needle between the two regiments, sports-wise. And we had a chap called Hill, who was a good boxer. actually had fought professional, which this was found out later on, but he beat the Lincolnshire man aboard ship. We had a boxing tournament, and Hill won, but I can't remember the Lincolnshire man's name. But George Hill, he was known as Bobby Lees. He fought under the name of Bobby Lees as a professional. And when we went out, there was always a bit of needle between 1st Battalion Seaforth and 2nd Battalion Seaforth. And the reigning champion out there at the time, you're lightweight, Mickey Gorman, Edinburgh chap. Terrific boxer, All India champion. And when we arrived, when Hill arrived, there was two camps sort of thing, you know. And Hill and Gorman met, and Gorman got the decision as the reigning champion. But 1st Battalion contingent will never be convinced that he was entitled to the verdict sort of thing, you know.
When there was this needle between different regiments, like between the Seaforths and the Lincolns, was this needle shown just on the sports field? Or was there ever any trouble?
Oh, no, there was never...
Any punch-ups or anything?
No. It was all friendly rivalry, so to say.
Where did you arrive when you got to India?
Bombay.
Can you describe what happened when you got ashore?
Well, when we disembarked and were in the troop shed, two pals and I had won quite a bit of money on the boat coming over, and we decided to have a night out on the town. And
How had you won the money?
Gambling.
With cards?
We went into Bombay, but unfortunately the military police were in large numbers there around when troops were arriving and what have you, and they picked us up for being out of bounds. And we thought, well, we'll give them the wrong names and numbers and they'll probably just send us back to the troop shed, which they didn't. They took us back. And I can always remember Sergeant Lim was in charge of the draft, and they told him they'd got three Seaforths, so and so. He said, oh no, he said, there's nobody of that name on the Seaforth draft. And they said, well, they're Seaforths, they're in the kilt, and they're definitely Seaforths. You better come down and have a look at them. Of course, Jock Lim came down and got the shock of his life when he found that there were three Seaforths. Anyway, we came back to the tripping shed, and then we entrained for Lahore.
So before we go on to the train, what happened to you? Were you put on a charge?
Oh, yes. No, well, we were told that we would be charged. You see... the military police charges take a little time to come through, and we're told that we'd be charged when we arrived at the 2nd Battalion in Lahore. And we were, and I got 14 days CB. One of my pals lost his strike. The other one got 14 days CB. And it damn near killed us, actually, because... At that time, you did an hour's pack drill every night. And just being new to the country and not used to the conditions, it was a pretty hard slog every night for an hour. And then you were given all sorts of chores to do, certain cookhouse fatigues and things like that, during your 14 days confinement to barracks or anything. But that was the one and only time I I learned my lesson and I never had any more CB.
So it was a good introduction to India.
It was a fair old introduction to India, yeah.
What did you think of the country when you first arrived? What were your impressions?
Well, Bombay was a thriving city, but the outskirts that we visited and visited since were, well, didn't think much of it at all. The squalid conditions the people lived in, they were all poor. We never saw any well-to-do ones.
And what was the train journey like? Was it like a train journey in England,
journey
from Bombay to Lahore?
No, Bombay to Lahore, the train had square wheels. No, it was a pretty... You travelled in compartments that were used for... The things come down and made into bunks for the night travel, you know. Just like the sleepers in our train, but nothing nearly so comfortable. And it was a hot, dusty sort of a journey. You got out at various stations, stretch your legs, but I can't just remember how long it took us now. You see, you can go on the Indian trains for days, for weeks. Actually, when we went from Jhansi to the Northwest Frontier, it took us a fortnight, I think, by train to get there. We travelled long distances.
How did you feed on the trains?
They had kitchens. Nothing was really all that different regarding feeding. You had adequate rations, and you replenished the water every so often, your water bottles. But it was a bit rough. There were no dining halls or. You had your food on a table in the compartment. The compartment was used for everything. I mean, eating, sleeping, and drinking, sort of thing.
When you got to the barracks at Lahore, what was your first impression of the barracks? Was it like going to a barracks in Britain or not?
Oh, no, entirely different. They were built differently. They weren't, in England you had multi-storey barracks, and out there they were bungalow type, long bungalows. Birdwood Barracks in Lahore was a very comfortable barracks. Conditions in the barracks were very good. Air conditioning was all right. We had fans from the ceiling, about one, two, three to each bungalow, and in some there were punkawallas that operated the punkas, and you were kept cool enough in the barracks, because you had to be, actually, because you couldn't go out, not after 10 o'clock in the morning. There was only anybody on special duties or anything like that who had to go out, but you didn't go out unless it was absolutely necessary. The barracks were all right, they were comfortable.
What type of training were you doing when you arrived in India? Was there any special training you did, or was it just square bashing and gun training?
You did plenty of square bashing. You were taught the use of different weapons. You had lectures, and then you went on the ranges. You used to go to fire a course on the rifle or the Bren gun, not the Bren gun, the Lewis and the Vickers machine gun. Training was mainly consisted of route marching. Of course, there was company training. platoon training, company training, battalion training. And then there was annually a sort of brigade training, a brigade scheme, where other units were brought in to train with you. You went to the hill stations where you did mountain warfare. The training that we had then came in very handy when we had to go to the frontier later on in my army life.
What type of things did you do in the mountain warfare training? What did it consist of?
Well, there were objectives to be taken. There was how they were to be taken worked out. There was opposition to be overcome. There was other units. We had the Gurkhas. We did quite a lot of mountain warfare in Dagshire and Ranikit with the Gurkhas. And they taught us quite a lot about how to get through the mountainous country without being seen. But there was quite a few different schemes that were carried out, all very useful in case there was going to be the real thing.
What did you think to the Gurkhas?
Oh, the Gurkhas were great lads. Very friendly, easy to get on with, as good as a British soldier, better in some cases because they were used for special assignments that they didn't think British troops could carry out.
What type of assignments?
Well, infiltration, more able to get to where they wanted to get without being caught in traps and what have you.
Were they paid the same as British troops?
No, they were paid a little less. I think about tuppence less than a British soldier.
Tuppence a day?
Tuppence a day, aye. But
what was
they were very nearly as well paid as we were.
Well, what